Good morning.
Tuesday morning with our political observer, Alan Chartalk. Let's start with the story that's at the top of most of the headlines this morning. Johnson & Johnson ordered to pay $572 million in landmark opioid trial. Alan, a judge in Oklahoma, has ruled against the corporate giant, holding it responsible for the state's drug crisis. The closely watched case could be a warning for some two dozen opioid makers, distributors, and retailers that face more than 2,000 similar lawsuits. The other states are suing a range of drug makers. Johnson & Johnson was the only one on trial in Oklahoma.
David, the interesting thing here is that the stock actually went up because people thought they were going to get fined a lot more than they actually did. You know, this is an acceptable punishment, apparently, but they are, of course, going to appeal it and say that, they manufactured this drug. It did help an awful lot of people, they say, who are in terrible pain, and that's what it was for. We'll see where it comes down. Remember, it all has to go up to the Supreme Court. And remember that Donald Trump owns that Supreme Court, lock, stock, and barrel in my mind. So it is going to be an interesting write-up as we see whether American corporate interests of this kind get protected no matter what. We'll see. You know, somebody has to play the scapegoat. It may be that they need a scapegoat, but it is a fascinating case study for me in terms of the way in which all of this comes together and works.
Foreign policy and the G7. The president talking about the way he negotiates, specifically saying, sorry, it's the way I negotiate. It's done me well over the years, and it's doing even better for the country, I think he said. Meanwhile, President Trump insisted to the U.S. allies at the opening dinner that Russia belongs back in the elite group of leading nations, and then bluntly informed his French counterpart they do not see eye to eye in Iran. But by the end of day three, Trump was in public saying there's been no fights or arguments. Great unity here.
The way that this president negotiates is the way he ran his real estate practice. He walks in the room, he throws something out, he rejects something that he said he could do. This is the kind of thing that he does. When he says that's the way he negotiates, he's right, and it has served him well. He's president of the United States, incredibly, but he is. He's a liar. He misrepresents. He's a disgrace to the country. Our foreign contemporaries want nothing to do with him and are scared to death of him and walk away. Because after all, it is the United States. This group of six or seven or eight, depending on who gets in, is not nearly as important as what this one man thinks. I think it's something that a lot of people miss. So we've got several more months for this president to be in office, and he may succeed himself. It's a terror. A lot of people think it's a nightmare, but so it is.
New 2020 poll. This is a Monmouth University poll, Alan.
I saw it.
Yeah, three-way tie among Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and Joe Biden. The main takeaway from this poll is that the Democratic race has become volatile.
It has. Look, here's the way it works. The Democratic Party is made up of a lot of people who are just disgusted with Donald Trump. As you know, a majority of the Democratic congressmen are now for impeachment or for an impeachment inquiry, whatever that means. Nevertheless, Democrats are furious. They want the best possible aggressive force to meet Donald Trump. And I'm fascinated by Elizabeth Warren. I'll tell you why. First of all, she's my senator, and I like her very much. Second of all, she is moving into what I would call the Joe Biden role. She's making it clear, unlike Bernie Sanders, that she's not for blowing everything up, for changing everything, that she wants the Democratic Party to remain whole, and she's for it. So that while she has a great reputation as a person who will shake things up a bit, she also is making it clear that she is capable of the mantle of leading the party and that she wants a party, and that will serve her well.
Meanwhile, Monday op-ed in Columbia Journalism Review, Alan, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders said that if elected president, he would impose an immediate moratorium on approval of deals that would make media giants even bigger. We are not going to rubber stamp proposals like the new plan to merge CBS and Viacom into a $30 billion colossus, he wrote. He also said the major media companies should be required to disclose whether their planned mergers could bring newsroom job cuts, and employees should be able to purchase media outlets through stock ownership plans.
I read the op-ed that he wrote. He certainly presents a clarion call for the way in which newspapers and journals have been treated in this country. Some of it I agree with, some of it I don't. But for the most part, he's right on the money. And he is obviously creating a climate, he thinks, will reject this concept of the press as the enemy of the people, which is the dastardly thing that has been presented by this president of the United States and has been presented by dictators throughout history. Kill the press and you win. So Sanders is on the money, and it's good to see him speaking out. And what he does in this op-ed piece is to indicate basically what's happened to the press in this country. How many newspapers have closed, and how little news there is compared to what there used to be. He's on the money.
Tehran. Iran's president backpedaled yesterday on possible talks with Donald Trump, saying the U.S. president must first lift sanctions imposed on Tehran. Otherwise, a meeting between the two would be a mere photo op.
I don't know what to say. The Iranians are not good people. That we know. The leaders are. I think the people are, of course. But the leaders are not good. We know that, and we know it from the history. We know all about the Revolutionary Guard. We know all about their oppression. Nevertheless, this president has baited them at every single turn and made the situation worse rather than getting better. The Iranian leaders know they're between a rock and a hard place, and they feel, apparently, that they have very little choice. They have been made the enemy from the very beginning by Donald Trump, and they are in many ways cornered, and they know it.
Our political observer, Alan Shartok, also in the know. Thanks, Alan.
And thank you, David. Thanks for the good questions. Always get me to thinking. Thanks.